Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. It's President's Cup week. President's Cup starts tonight, Wednesday night. Prime time. It'll be exciting. I mean, anytime you get good golf with big names kind of in those windows, I think people watch and they pay attention to it. I have Alan Shipnuck from Golf Magazine and Golf.com on to discuss kind of everything that goes into the President's Cup, the Patrick Reed stuff. And we dove at length a little bit into some stuff we'd like to see changed about the President's Cup. And I said it during the interview, I'm going to say it now. I give these ideas, these tips, these thoughts, because the President's Cup is an event that I want to be successful. I want any big golf event to do well because it's good for the sport. It's good for fans. It brings eyeballs in. All of that is good for people like myself who focuses on golf 95% of the year. So don't take it as that I'm some guy standing outside a house screaming at a closed door. This is my hope that the points are taken. At least they bring up a discussion. And that's what we do. That's what Alan and I did. This week's Clubhouse podcast, as all the Clubhouse podcasts are brought to you by my good friends at Titleist. And you probably know this from the tree in your house, or the menorah, or the lights outside. It's the holidays, and finding the perfect gift can be a challenge. But if there's a golfer on your list, and I've got a bunch on mine, it's easy. Give the number one gift in golf, Titleist. I like to give Titleist golf balls because I love getting them myself. My dad, when I was a kid, every Christmas, you know, you get golf clubs occasionally. You might get a driver here or a putter here that you ask 4 months in advance. But my dad would always, always, always give me a dozen Titleist golf balls. Of course, back in the day, it was the Balada 90, then the Professional. And I think we had a stint, maybe one Christmas late in my high school years where I got a dozen Tour Prestige. But of course, once the Pro V came out, it was always the Pro V. Even when I was in college, he would up it to two dozen because he knew I was a poor college kid. And it was always one of my favorite gifts because it's reliable. You need golf balls. You use them. They are a perfect gift for the golfer in your life. I mean, what would you not like about unwrapping a dozen Pro Vs or a dozen Pro V1Xs or AVX golf balls? You tear the paper open. You see the dozen golf balls with that shiny Titleist script. And you immediately just want to get out on the golf course and tee one up. And here's the best part. You don't have to worry about sizes or styles, young or old, beginner or expert. They fit every golfer. And there's no gift receipt required. Take my advice and just write this down on your scorecard because it's a good score to have. Titleist golf balls, a holiday gift everyone appreciates. It's easy to wrap too. For somebody that's wrapping challenged, I'd say, I might be the worst gift wrapper on the planet. Really, really easy to wrap golf balls. One of the easiest in the world to wrap, mind you. So that makes even myself look like I know what I'm doing if you do golf balls for a gift. Titleist, number one golf ball in the world and the number one golf gift in the world. Do it. Just do it for yourself. All right, let's get to Alan. Well, we welcome back in the clubhouse one of our favorite guests, Alan Shipnuck, senior writer for Golf Magazine and Golf.com. You can find him on Twitter, always ruffling feathers, at Alan Shipnuck. Alan, what would you say your relationship with social media is like? Do you love it or do you hate it, or is it kind of in the middle?
It's an abusive relationship. you know, I give and give, but I get nothing back. I enjoy social media. I live in a little bubble here in Carmel, California. It's a sleepy town, and so the world is at your fingertips. I do follow more than just golf people. There's, I follow movie critics and cultural critics and writers and various folks, and I enjoy it. Golf Twitter is a universe unto itself. Of course, if you dish it out, you got to take it. And so I never get too bothered by the snarkiness that comes my way. But, I think I've said this before. For me, professionally, is that I put so much care into my stories and so much time. I labor over every word, and hopefully there's like a depth and there's a lot of reporting. Twitter, I just goof off. I just toss things off without thinking too much. And so I think there's various people, including players and others in the game, who know my Twitter persona, which really kind of capture the work I do. So it's sort of in conflict, but I guess, we're all multifaceted, so it is what it is. But I enjoy it. I've actually tried getting off Twitter, but it only lasts a few days because, again, I keep coming back. It's an abusive relationship.
Well, Alan, the President's Cup is here. It's literally today. It comes on in the States. I'd say it's an event that, I have to be honest, has been boosted a lot over the last 3, 4, 5 days. I mean, controversy helps anything that needs help, I guess is a good way to say it. And this event needed help any way it could get it. And Patrick Reed has allowed that to happen. And no matter what you think about Patrick Reed or what you think about what happened at the Hero World, this is going to help people pay attention to an event that honestly gets lost a little bit in the schedule.
Yeah, Patrick Reed's always doing what's right for golf. You know, he's such a giver. I agree. It turned up the volume on the whole thing. Although, of course, we had a chance to match him up against Cam Smith right away, and the captains blew that. Like that, they're just almost afraid to push it too far. And it's kind of like Reed. His whole relationship with being the villain is complicated because he is a perfect villain. But he plays the victim, and he kind of has this martyr complex, and deep down he really wants to be loved and accepted. So he can't go full heel turn and really be the bad guy. That something holds him back, and it makes it a little less fun. You know, like at least Ian Poulter would kind of preen around and have some fun with it. Although deep down he wants to be liked as well. So I don't know, but it's just a problem in golf. You know, there's no Bill Laimbeer. Someone who just loves being the bad guy and just thrives on it. You know, all these guys are sensitive souls, and the slings and arrows affect them. So I'll be curious to see if Reed really puts it on the crowd and vice versa, or how that plays out, because it's an interesting dynamic. But I agree, it's made this run up to the President's Cup a lot more enjoyable, because usually it's intolerable.
Yeah, you're a guy that has had your run-ins, I guess you could say, with Patrick Reed in the past. I mean, you wrote the article after he won the Masters that focused a little bit on the family dynamic, and it wasn't the easiest thing to dive into. It was a very different story to write. It was a great story. I mean, I thought you really presented it from a whole bunch of different angles, but that's going to be one of those things that the Reed camp and alike is going to look at you differently than they ever did before. What's been that relationship like for you, following all of that from the Masters when Reed won, with Reed, when you're at press conferences, when you get a chance to talk to him? Does he seem like a guy that kind of holds it against you, or has he kind of let it blow by?
You know, the Reed camp is interesting because Patrick, despite appearances, is a pretty easygoing guy. I mean, he doesn't personally seem to get caught up in too much of this stuff, but his wife and his mother-in-law, which is really the heart of, you know, they're in deep, and they're wilding out in the comment sections on social media. You know, they take it, they see everything, read everything, absorb everything, and they hold all the grudges. Patrick just kind of, he just does his thing, and I think he accepts that answering questions is a part of the job, albeit an unpleasant one for him. And so it's pretty mellow with him. But I mean, basically, his mother-in-law and his wife are feuding with everybody all the time, it seems like. You know, I mean, if you're calling out Golf Channel, like, Golf Channel is not a media organization. It is a warm and fuzzy propaganda arm of the PGA Tour in most ways. And so if you can't get along with Golf Channel, that says more about you than them. And, I know they're mad at my colleague Dylan DeCher for some things he's typed. I'm not sure that they really have a positive relationship with any reporter. I mean, it's a very tribal us against them mentality. Justine, she won't even look at me anymore. And if I have to ask Patrick a question in kind of like a scrum or a press conference, I just ask a question, and he'll answer it. But it's not, as far as warm and fuzzy hellos, and am I going to get any access to ride around in the Lambo with him down in Houston? I mean, I think that ship has sailed, but I'm okay with it.
Well, you've been okay with it with a lot of people. I mean, that's something that I respect about you and journalists alike, that you're not scared to do your job, I guess is maybe a weird way to say it, but it is, we are living in a time where a lot of people want to be friends with the athletes, and I feel like that's very different. We had that era, you know, we had the era with and we'll stick to golf just because this is a golf podcast, but you know, you talk about Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and that era of people that had their pals that were journalists that they were friends with that they would bum around with. You could even go back to the start of Augusta National, and you know, certain journalists were invited into Augusta. I mean, that was a part of how it all began, and I feel like we're kind of almost going back to that a little bit, where there is a world in the media where being pals with these players looks like a good thing. And I guess I wonder, is it interesting? Is it weird? Is it different to be one of the people that isn't scared to ask a question you know the player's not going to like, or write an article that you know might not be the friendliest thing for these players to see?
Yeah, for sure. The landscape has changed, and it's honestly a little weird to me. I mean, I came up at SI, and those were hardcore reporters, and you know, most of the editors had been newspaper guys. Very competitive, combative kind of mentality, and that's what I imbued. Which not to say, I mean, it's a relationship business, and it's nice to have some rapport with players and agents and you know, tour officials. I mean, that's part of the job. Is you're out there a lot, you make friendships, you have people you connect with, and that's fine. But ultimately, you know, the reason I'm out there is for the reader. Like they come first. So if I have to choose between writing a good story that the golf fans are going to appreciate, or having a guy say hello to me on the range, you know, for me, it's an easy choice. Like my self identity and my self worth is not tied up in PGA Tour players giving me a bro hug. you know, there's a lot of guys on the beat. That seems to be the most important thing to them now. And I just don't really care. I mean, of course, we're all humans. It's you'd rather have someone, you know, have warm and fuzzy feelings towards you than shoot you daggers. But it's just the business we're in. Sometimes you have to write something that people aren't going to like. And I know there's a lot of guys who just pull their punches really aren't comfortable.
Yeah. Do you get players that come up to you ever and say, "I loved what you wrote"? Or, I mean, not naming players' names, but do you get players that come up to you and when you dive into a subject and they say, "Man, I thought that was great," or, you know, "I love the approach you had," or the angle you took with this piece?
Well, it's not quite that nuanced, but for sure you'll get, now it's more like you'll get something on social media. You know, it's funny because I'll get DMs. Like, people don't want to say it publicly, but I'll link to a story and a player will DM me, say, "Oh, a cool story," or something like that, as opposed to making it public, which is totally fine. I appreciate it any way you get it. But yeah, they're not analyzing the journalistic structure and stuff like that.
They don't have the highlighter out. They're not highlighting their favorite lead you have for the month.
The nut graph was just so eloquent. But so yeah, I mean, of course that's appreciated. Like, you know, I respect their opinion, and but I'm not beholden to it. And so, yeah, to go back to your original question, it's a strange time in all of media. It's evolved so much. But the golf beat is more intimate and more cloistered than almost any other. I mean, if you're the NFL writer for The Athletic or for Sports Illustrated, I mean, you might not see the same team twice. You know,
right.
You're bouncing around the biggest games. And you're not crossing paths with the same players, the same coaches that often. You know, on the tour, you're seeing the same guys week after week after week. So, I mean, the relationships are important, but, you know, it's nice if the players respect what I do, if they appreciate it, but the friendship aspect is a fine line. And, you know, ultimately you have to remember who you're working for. It's not the tour and it's not the agents. It's not even the players. I mean, it's the fans and the readers. So I've always been clear on that, and I know where my allegiances lie, but I do question various other folks who are, you know, hanging out at the buffet and the press tent.
The buffet. Well, that was a journalism tangent that I wasn't expecting we were going to take. I want to get back a little bit to the President's Cup. You mentioned Patrick Reed and Cam not going up against each other, which I'm with you. That's a huge miss to me. This is, after everything you look at, past the shirts and the golf bags and the press conferences and the nice tuxedos, this is entertainment. And that's what these team events are, and I don't understand why you wouldn't put out the most entertaining match to start the President's Cup. But here are the day one four balls that will happen Wednesday afternoon. So a little bit later today as you're listening to this. You got Neiman and Leishman first off against Tiger and Justin Thomas. So that will be obviously a must watch. These are four balls, so that's the first format. You've got Sungjae and Adam Hadwin going up against Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. Ben On, Adam Scott go up against Tony Finau and bulked up. I don't know if I'm using bulked up. Just bigger, maybe? Bryson DeChambeau. You got CT Pan and Hideki or Patrick Reed and Webb Simpson. Louis Anser take on Gary Woodland and Dustin Johnson, which will be a fun one as well. I mentioned all five matches that happen in this opening day. Which of those are you most excited to watch?
Well, obviously, it was quite a flex by the captain to put himself out first with his little buddy JT. I mean, all eyes are going to be on that match. You know, my favorite swing in golf is still King Louis, and to have him, you know, throwing haymakers out there with Dustin and Gary Woodland, that's going to be fun. I like this international team. I mean, it's scrappy, and a lot of these guys are underrated and underappreciated. I'm looking forward to watching them play more than the Americans, just to see which of them will be inspired. You know, who's going to be pumping the fist? Who's going to be making birdies? I think we kind of know what we're going to get out of the U.S. It's going to be good, somewhat passionless golf, and that's what the internationals can bring, because it's really up to them to make this a good event. I mean, let's face it, the American team is quite strong. I expect them to play well. But can the internationals, you know, raise the level of this whole competition? That, I mean, the onus is on them, in my mind. If the U.S. lays an egg, it's like, well, they were stuck on a tin can for 20 hours and they don't really care about the President's Cup. Isn't it all their built-in excuses, you know? But the internationals have no excuses. I mean, they've just been getting kicked in the teeth year after year. Like, they got to bring it. And so I'm excited to watch how those guys play. But, you know, Royal Melbourne is such an interesting venue. It's the antithesis of PGA Tour, bomb and gouge. I mean, it's really a very subtle, very strategic golf course with some hellacious greens. And it's a thinking man's course. It's a finesse course. It's going to play very short. It's too bad the modern equipment has kind of rendered a lot of its strategy obsolete. But nevertheless, it's going to be hard for these guys to hit it close. It's going to take a lot of geometry to get the ball to the flag. So I think, you know, on paper that would probably favor the internationals, just because they're not mindless caveman golfers like a lot of the Americans. So, but how they all navigate this golf course is going to be fascinating to watch. And I think in a lot of ways, Royal Melbourne's going to be the star more than any player.
Yeah, you wrote a piece on golf.com, and I totally agree with you. I think Royal Melbourne is the star. I mean, it's people like you and I that say that. I don't know if the casual golf fan or casual sports fan ever really cares about the golf course. But, you know, when you're really talking about the most fun designs, the best designs, and again, I am a novice golf course architect, critic, if critic at all. I just like to play golf. I'm not necessarily looking at where the bunkering is and how the green lays, but I had a chance to play Royal Melbourne a couple years ago, and it was one of the most fun golf courses that I've had a chance to play. I know you were over there recently, and you got a chance to play it, and you basically laid that out. It was a great piece. It dove into the composite golf course at Royal Melbourne, you know, obviously combined in the west and a few holes on the east, and how, you know, it's a credit to the designers. You don't know which hole is on which course when you're watching it, and it makes it a lot of fun. It's a place that's hosted a lot of President's Cups in the past. It is a golf course that I think, when you're talking about the hardcore golf fan, they do get excited to see something like this on TV, and hopefully it's firm, hopefully it's fast, hopefully the greens are what they should be. And I think, and tell me what the feel is for you, but when you talk about a Ryder Cup, no matter if you're a journalist from the UK or a journalist in the United States, I feel like somewhere deep down you're hoping your team wins. I don't get that sense about the President's Cup. What percentage of American journalists that you know, friends, colleagues, or even enemies, do you feel like is deep down somewhat rooting for the internationals to actually pull this out?
Oh, I'd say it's about 98%.
Yeah, it feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just for competitive parity, you need the internationals to win, and win more regularly. But also, anytime the U.S. loses, it's delicious. The recriminations and the finger pointing, and I mean, that's always a fun aspect. So, you know, what do we like writing about? Controversy and tension. I mean, that you get a lot when you just lose one of these cups. So, I think and Ernie Els is a beloved figure in the game. It'd be great for him to finally get one over on Tiger. There's Aussie fans. It's weird because are they going to be super excited about rooting for a guy from South America or from Asia? I mean, not necessarily, but there are enough Australians on the team. And I think that they will get with the whole spirit of it. I think it's going to be loud and crazy out there at times, especially if it's close. So you need a U.S. blowout does nothing for this event. There's no buzz whatsoever. Even a close U.S. victory is like, ho-hum. But if the internationals can pull it out, it's way more fun, and then it sets up some intrigue next time around. And so, yeah, I mean, the irony is, I think some people know that I wrote a story about the Ryder Cup last time around that created some hard feelings and a lot of conversation. And the bitter irony is I've almost always rooted for Europe at the Ryder Cup for all the reasons I just laid out. It's just more fun when Europe wins, and the controversy that ensues is great. And they're a more fun-loving group of guys. So the one time I really, hitched my wagon to the U.S. team, I picked the wrong year. But, as reporters, we don't root for players. We don't root for flags. We root for stories. I mean, at least I do. And so, without a doubt, international victory would be a much better story this time around.
Yeah, I mean, I've been critical of the President's Cup over the years, and my criticism lies simply in the idea that I want this to be fun and I want this to be good. I'm not critical of it because I'm hating on the event. I understand the event, but I want the event to be more fun to watch and be excited about, because basically you're mimicking an event that I would say people would probably rate is first or second favorite golf event in the world in the Ryder Cup. And you're putting this out there with an extra day and more points, but otherwise pretty much the same thing with the same side of players year after year after year, albeit maybe four or five guys that are changed in and out. I mean, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, whoever you want to say. But it's got to be fun at some point, and for it to be fun, it's got to be competitive. And for it to be competitive, you're eventually going to need a massive win. And I think you need a big win that comes with a little trash talking after. I think that would be a best case scenario here, is the internationals win this thing and they're up there at the podium drinking champagne saying, we're not scared of these guys. We've kind of figured it out. Ernie laid the groundwork. I can't wait for 2 years from now. And it's got to feel a little bit like 99 running out on the green when the putt goes in to fire up the other side. And that's what we're going to need for this thing to be great. If the internationals get close or win, and there's a little rubbing your face in the dirt, to me, that would be the best thing for this event, because that would make 2 years from now all the better.
Oh, yeah, 1,000,000%. And, you need some context, too. Like, when you think about when the President's Cup began in 1994, I mean, the two best players in the world were probably Nick Price and Greg Norman. Steve Elkington was in the conversation. Vijay Singh was beginning his ascent. I mean, it was a pretty powerhouse team. I think Norman didn't even play in 94 because there was some controversy there. But nevertheless, he was the guy, and he carried it forward after that. And, the international had some studs back in that era. And U.S. golf was kind of down. That was the sort of the post-Watson, pre- Tiger era, where if you won one major, you had a great career. It just wasn't the number of superstars. So when the cup began, there was really, I think, thinking that this was going to be highly competitive. It was legit, and then all these Americans could come through and dominate the world ranking and the majors. Internationals have had guys you think. I mean, gosh, you would think that Adam Scott would be a dominant player, but he never quite got there. Jason Day, we know what's happened this time around. And you can go on down the list. They just haven't been able to quite bring it to sustain the parity that the cup was originally founded on. So, it's problematic. I mean, if you know the outcome to a sporting event before it even begins, this is no fun. So everyone's assuming the U.S. is going to win. If they win handily, it's like, you know, really? What was all this about? I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. We absolutely have to get a good cup, and we need the internationals to start winning, and we need it to start getting ugly. And Cam Smith is doing his part.
Right.
Like, we need everyone else to access their inner badass and start preening around and start talking trash and make it personal, because right now it's just not personal. I mean, the American players show up because they have to, but they're not really invested in this. And you know, they just – there's nothing personal about the President's Cup, and that needs to change.
Just want to take a quick break to remind you we are nearing Christmas. The holidays are here. If you haven't picked out a gift for the golfer in your life, do yourself a solid. Make this whole thing easier. Give some Titleist golf balls. They're the number one golf ball in the sport, the number one ball in golf, and it is an unbelievable gift. Pro V1, Pro V1X, AVX, whatever your golf person plays. And if you have a question, if you don't know what to buy them, here's the easiest thing to do. Just text their golf buddy. Every golf friend knows the golf ball that their buddies play. Just send the text to Fred or Patrick or Pete or Lauren or Sandra and say, hey, what does X play? I need to get them some golf balls. They'll respond immediately, and that's helpful. Boom, there you go. You can get them some Pro Vs. You can get them some Pro V1Xs, some AVXs, whatever they play. That's the easiest way to do it, and they'll like it. Trust me. They will put them in their golf closet. They will use them the next day, and they will like you just a little bit more. Titleist, the number one golf ball in the sport and the number one gift in golf. All right, back to Alan Shipnuck. You know what the most foreshadowing for the President's Cup thing ever was? In 1994, I was diving into this, as you mentioned, was Greg Norman on or off the team? He was not on the team that year, by the way. Friday morning four ball, the first four ball match, the first matches in the history of the President's Cup, USA went 5-0. They won all five matches. So that's basically what the President's Cup has been encapsulated in one morning four ball. They were actually up 7-0 to start. They won the next two matches in the afternoon. It was just an absolute blowout. So I was on, I guess, hosted the shotgun start because Brendan Porath is on paternity leave with Andy Johnson this week. And I threw out this idea. It's something I've kind of been pining for a bit. It would be a change to the President's Cup. And my idea is simple. It's six men and six women. And my idea is, when you look at the best female golfers in the world right now, the majority of them in the top 15 in the world are from Asia. And then you get, you know, there's a good mix of American players in there as well. So you get the top six, you know, ranked international players and the top six ranked men's USA players on the men's and women's side. So I laid out the team, if you did that right now, on the Rolex World Rankings and the OWGR. And just tell me if this seems like something that would interest you, because when I tell you the team, I feel like it will. You get Jin Young Ko, who's the number one ranked player in women's golf, Sung Hyun Park, you get Nasa, you get Se-young Kim, Jung Un Lee 6, Minji Lee, and then you get Adam Scott, Hideki, Leishman, Shugo, who I feel like kind of got hosed, Jason Day, and Sung Jae on the international side. On the women's side, you get the Cordis sisters, Danielle Kang, Lexi Thompson, Lizette Salas, Brittany Altomore, and then you get Koepka, JT, DJ, Tiger, Cantlay, and Xander. And basically, you tell the captains, you pair whoever you want with whomever you want, and you play whoever you want in singles against whoever you want, throw out gender totally, and let's see what happens. How fun would that be for golf?
I like it. I mean, we need a mixed team event in general. I mean, it's never been more apparent how much fun that would be. And it seems like the tours can't make it happen. So why not shift that idea to a bigger stage? And, you know, there's no downside, because as we've been talking about, the President's Cup as it is now is not really working. So it would take a radical rethinking. I mean, unfortunately, it's the PGA Tour's baby. They want to cede the stage to the LPGA. I mean, so let's face it, we'd all be a lot more excited about watching the women play in this. I think the PGA Tour marketing folks know that. But, I mean, we'll see how this one goes. But if it's another U.S. blowout, I mean, it's time to really go back to the drawing board because, you know, what are you even doing here? But yeah, I mean, I that makes sense. I'm all for being creative. You know, if we're now going on a quarter century of the President's Cup, and if people still don't care, it's time to blow it up.
Exactly. I mean, it's to me, I you're right about the PGA Tour not wanting to basically relinquish any of their quote unquote power for this championship because it's their baby. But again, way more people would be talking about it, would be watching it, would care about it. And I'm talking about people outside the golf world. I mean, if you said you could, A, market this as easy as humanly possible. The marketing idea now that I've seen a lot thrown around is this is to break the tie, basically, between when Tiger and Ernie tied in the President's Cup years ago in South Africa. This isn't to break the tie, for goodness sakes. That was, what was that, 20 years ago? I mean, that's the marketing idea behind this, because those are the two captains. To me, this would be the easiest marketed thing in the world. You'd say, you want to see golf? You want to see, you know, competitive golf? Here are the 12 best people in American golf versus the 12 best people in international golf. Let's have at it. And I feel like this would, you know, you'd have national sports writers writing about it. You'd have national credentialed, you know, journalists heading down there to follow this thing. And to me, the PGA Tour would be benefited by that. You know, that would be something that would help them out in terms of what they're presenting as their kind of prized product in terms of international competition.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's just interesting. I mean, even the 2003 Tiger Ernie battle in the dark, it's funny how it's been whitewashed by history because that was a mess.
Thank you.
Getting dark.
Thank you. I said the same thing. I got ridiculed for this.
They're like, I really knew what was going on. Then when I said it was going to be a tie, he gets to keep the cup. They were the de facto winners. And then they had to hastily revise, no, we're going to share the cup. It was a disaster. It was a total mess. Ridiculous. Out in the dark. I mean, it was amateur art. Yeah, the fact that Elves and Tiger made some great putts, I mean, that was cool. But everything that followed was a total, can we say shit show?
Yes, you can say shit show.
Yeah, it was a total shit show. And so anyway, it was just like, okay, guys, this is your crowning moment. I mean, it was not the bureaucracy lost on that one. But, you know, even though we spent most of this time bagging on the play, I'd rather have it than not. I mean, it's definitely.
Well, I mean, and that's my point. I mean, and that's kind of what I'm trying to make clear here is I'm not trying to bag on the President's Cup because I want it to be a successful event. My thing is, I mean, you do this in your own life. You're doing something and it's not working out. You got to change it. I mean, you have to do that as a parent, as a husband or wife, as somebody at work. I mean, these things happen to all of us. And it just seems like this is one of those things that could take some tweaking to make it better. And that's all I'm trying to say is I'm here to help make an event that showcases some of the best players in all of golf. Listen, you got them on an airplane. You send them to a golf course. You're making them play 4 days of golf at a high, high level. Why not make this as fun and as watchable as humanly possible? And that's all I'm saying. I also, this is a side note, I also feel like the captain should have to play each other in the singles part, but that's just me. I just think that'd be fun.
I mean, for sure. Some of the vice captains are more compelling than some of the players. I mean, or at least they could send them out like they used to do at the Masters. People forget the honorary starters at Augusta, like, sometimes they just keep going. Like, I think they played 9 holes one time. Like, hey, that was a good shot. I'm like, oh, sure. Next thing you know, they're making a turn. Like, I would love to see Tiger and Ernie.
Yeah, we can
only dream.
And anyway, that's our President's Cup talk. And again, I'm going to watch it. It's on primetime. We've got some controversy. Obviously, a lot of names involved that we care about watching that play golf. And I'm sure it's going to be fun. And I hope it's close. And fingers crossed the internationals win. And that makes 2 years more exciting. I'm going to let you go in a minute. But I do want to ask, as we kind of wrap up 2019, your event of 2019, and if you say the Masters, that's fine, but if you say the Masters, I want you to add a 1B.
Oh, Solheim Cup, are you kidding me?
That's what I'm saying. That's my event of the year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Solheim Cup was out of control. It was so much fun. The Masters will resonate forever What Tiger did was just an all-time victory lap. But I mean, Sunday was actually kind of boring. It was like the longest putt he made was 8 feet on the fifth hole, and there was after all those guys soiled themselves on the 12th, there was never a sense that anyone was going to do it, and so it was incredibly emotional, but it wasn't that exciting. So all the majors really. I mean, Woodland hit some great shots coming down the stretch, but he could have played the 18th hole at Pebble with a putter and still won. Same like Dustin made a nice little run at Bethpage, but he was so far back, he never felt like he was going to quite get there. Lowry, after he put the hammer down on Saturday, that was the round of the year for sure. It was the shooting Lowry 63 to seize control of that tournament. I mean, again, it was a great moment in golf. The fans came in, the celebration, it was wonderful. The crazy weather on Sunday at Portrush, but it never felt like he was not going to win that. So eventually, I thought the major championship winners were terrific, but I didn't think the majors were that great this year. There wasn't that much tension. There wasn't really a defining moment on Sunday of any of them. I guess maybe Gary Woodland's chip on 17 or that 3 wood on 14, but it was just a year. They just didn't have the dramatic walk off we've gotten spoiled with.
Yeah, we have a USGA show we're taping this week that's basically a wrap show for all the USGA championships, and so I was going through some of the highlights from the US Open that just kind of look back on it, and you forget the start from Brooks Koepka on Sunday. I think he birdied one, made that crazy par on two from the cross bunker.
Yeah.
Birdied three, birdied four, birdied five. And so you get to six, and you're thinking, okay, par five, obviously, he's going to make birdie here. And he didn't. I don't think he birdied six. And then seven was one of Brad Nye's holes, and he hit a close one in there. And I was going through with my stat guy. I was going through and I said, has basically anybody been five under through seven this week? Because that was where you had to kind of score and get it going. And the answer was
Yeah.
no. And so on air, on the broadcast, I said, this is for the best start of anybody all week long through seven holes, and this is our two-time defending champion. And he honked the putt. I think he made one more birdie the rest of the day. It was one of those where he was rolling and he was going to make it a championship on Sunday, and after he missed that, the air kind of came out of the balloon there for him. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you kind of knew who was going to win all the majors basically with 7 holes left, 6 holes left. I mean, after 12 with the leaders, as you mentioned, at Augusta, Lowry on the back nine, Woodland on the back nine, and even Koepka kind of bleeding out a little bit late. It kind of felt like you knew who was going to win. And so hopefully 2020 we see a little bit closer stuff. Yeah, I'm with you. Solheim Cup. I mean, when Suzanne does the Elway and just basically walks off and says, "This is it for me." And I've said this a couple times on this podcast, is I don't think people totally understand that it wasn't a putt. It was almost like Stableford, where it wasn't a putt to win or playoff. It was a putt to win or lose. That's so different for golf. You rarely get that. It was a putt. If you make
Yeah.
it, your team wins. If you miss it, your team loses. There's no in between.
Right. Well, and the Solheim was in that bang bang finish. I mean, there was two matches that were hanging by a thread, and there was four different outcomes for the whole Solheim Cup, it felt like, and the way it went down in the last 10, 15 minutes was just phenomenal, and all the great golf that preceded it. I mean, it was. I don't think there's even a 1B in this conversation. But it was a good year for golf. I mean, I think we had, as I said, we had terrific winners, minted some new stars. It's great to have Rory back. There's intrigue going forward. I mean, to me, Jordan Spieth fighting his way out of the slump is one of the most compelling stories we have. There's controversy galore. We don't have time to recount them all, but there's a lot of juiciness. I think the women's game is really, you look at their schedule, the buzz from the Solheim Cup, the emergence of the Cordis sisters, go down the list. I think the LPGA is stronger than it's ever been. So, I really do think it was a terrific year for the game, even in the absence of a bunch of walk-off putts, at the biggest tournament.
What do you got coming up in the next few weeks? Do you have any kind of season-ending stuff, any features that are going to be hitting us over basically the next December, early January?
Yeah, that's a good question. Big travelogue for Golf Magazine that goes into great detail about the Australia-New Zealand trip I took, some of which is already out there, but that's going to be a fun one in the February issue, which comes out pretty soon. I'm working on a feature on Mike Strant, the architect. He's kind of a cult figure in the game, and really enjoying that. That's my big feature in March. Got a great Masters preview story I'm working on, which I'm not going to discuss just yet because I know little elves from other publications are monitoring this podcast. They might steal my idea. I'm excited about that story. Actually, for the main issue, I've got a great feature, and the person I want to write about has already said yes, and we're just trying to figure out when we can get together and if he is going to really give it up. If so, it's going to be a great one. So, yeah, I mean, in my job, I'm always working on five or six big stories at a time because some of them are long in gestation to get people to say yes, to arrange the time, to get the photos, to do the follow-ups, the phone interviews, and talk to all the secondary characters. And sometimes you get halfway down the road and it falls apart for whatever reason. So, I'm always working on a bunch of things, which I enjoy. I mean, I like that aspect of it, and every day is different. But yeah, I'm excited. I was just looking back because 2019 was my first year writing full time for Golf Magazine. After having been at SI for so long, internally they asked, someone asked me to put together a list of stories that I did this year. And it's like, man, that was a pretty good year. I mean, I did that big piece on Cameroon, did the one on Ophelia, Park and Razamina. Peter Kessler, Steph Curry. It was a lot of variety, and a big kind of piece on the politics around Portrush. And a nice eclectic mix is what I'm always looking for. And certainly, people care a lot about the PGA Tour. And you have to focus on the players there, but I'd like to range a little further afield. And 2019 was a good year for that, and I hope to just keep it going.
Yeah, the Strands thing will be interesting. I'm a novice in terms of architecture, but the few of his courses that I have played, I would have loved to see the guy live to be, 85, 90 years old, because I could only imagine that we would all be talking about more of his golf courses in terms of must plays and must visits, and he would probably have one in on the coast of Oregon and Nova Scotia, and I'm sure he would have gotten it in some sort of a mix in that world. So It would have been a lot of fun, because they're all trippy. I mean, they're all wild and fun and crazy and different, and that's kind of what you want in this sport. So that'll be interesting. Alan, I appreciate the time as always, and we will catch up soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Shane.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole. It's in the hole.
A big thanks to my good friend Alan Shipnuck for jumping on. A thanks to you for listening. A thanks to Titleist for supporting the clubhouse all year long. And you for listening. You support it as well. If you like the podcast, you can gift me something. You don't have to even buy me any Titleist golf balls, but if you do, I play Pro V1X number 11s, and I've been playing the yellow one, which is a great, great kind of side gift. If you give some white golf balls, if you get 24 golf balls, maybe get them a dozen of the yellows just to change it up, see what they think. You never know. That's what I play. I've been playing them for about 6 months and really, really like them. But you don't have to get me golf balls. All you have to get me is a review of the clubhouse. Do it. It's holiday season. We give back. We do all of these things for other people. This is your chance to do something for me. Write a review. 5-star if you want. 4 stars, fine. I mean, not perfect here, for goodness sakes. I mess stuff up all the time. 4-star, I'll take it. But if you want to do 5-star because you're feeling great, that would be acceptable as well. Write a review. Tell your friends. Share this with when you can. I'll be on Twitter this week during the President's Cup, during primetime. I got a 6-month-old. I got nothing else to do. I'm going to be on the couch with Henry and the dog in my sweatpants watching the President's Cup and probably tweeting too much about what's going on. So follow me at Shane Bacon. Follow the clubhouse at the Clubhouse Pod. Hope you guys are having a great week. Hope you guys are having a stress-free holiday season. And we will check back later this month.